It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Today, Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Extension entomologist Laura Jesse answer your questions about the plants and insects in your life. On this edition, you'll hear about earwigs. A benign little creature with prominent pincers has a superstitious following. And are toadstool mushrooms sprouting up in your lawn? You'll hear why and what to do about them. Call in with your questions at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, from buds to bugs, just after the news. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio, and it's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We're talking plants and insects with Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Extension entomologist Laura Jesse. They'll take your questions about anything you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Good morning, Richard and Laura. How are you today?
Good. Good morning.
Great. Good morning.
Well, Laura, you mentioned that you'd like to just touch on a topic called earwigs for our discussion to open up the things today. Why are we talking about earwigs? And there's a little kind of a superstitious, folklorish thing around them. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes. And so you know, earwigs are interesting. It's actually a European earwig, and they've been in Iowa a long time, but it's only probably in the last handful of years that people have really started to notice them. Populations seem to really be increasing. These are the kind of inch or so long brown insects with the big pinchers at the tip of the abdomen. The pinchers look intimidating. They don't actually pinch. And the superstition is that with their name that they, I think the superstition is that they lay eggs in your ears and they hatch in there. And yeah, there's a lot of concern about them getting into ears, which is completely untrue. They lay their eggs outdoors.
Okay, so not to worry.
Not to worry at all about that. And they're actually very sweet. The female earwig, she actually cleans the mold off her eggs. And so for insects, that's quite a bit of parental care. So they're kind of sweet insects.
Okay, interesting. We'll just move on here, I think, to the calls right now. We'll go to Tim in Des Moines. Welcome to Horticulture Day, Tim. What's your question?
A pear tree in my backyard, and I think it's fairly mature. It's probably a 20-inch diameter trunk. And I try to spray it every year when it blooms with an agent to help it cut down on the fruit. And this year I must have missed horribly, because it's full. And one piece of advice that I had gotten is there's a lot of dead branches in it, and somebody had told me that the tree itself might actually be stressed and therefore fruiting more. And if I had somebody go in there and selectively prune it and try and get rid of some of the dead stuff up in the tree, that might actually help cut down a little bit on fruit production. Is there any truth to that?
Not really, as far as the pruning aspect of that. I mean, if you have dead limbs, I would have those pruned out, but that's not going to have any effect on the fruit numbers next year, so that part's not correct. You really don't have very many options. Fruit trees will sometimes bear heavily in alternate years or some other pattern. And so that may partially explain why they're so full this year.
Okay.
As far as preventing that, there is a product that you can spray at bloom that supposedly will cause the small fruits to abort and fall off very early in their development.
Yeah.
And you can buy these at garden centers.
Yep, and that's what I've been spraying. I've had excellent luck in years past, but this year I think you have to hit it when it's absolute full bloom.
Right, you do. You get one shot.
About a 2-day window, and I must have hit it too early because it continued to bloom after I sprayed it, and I knew what I had done, and I had used up all my stuff. So that was just bad luck on my part,
right,
or bad judgment. But it seems like the majority of the dead stuff on the tree is just are small branch, small offshoots off the main branches that have just died off, and I have noticed that there's a kind of a big cleave in the main crotch that kind of shows up at different periods of the year. I don't know if it's temperature or humidity related, but I want to get the tree reasonably healthy because it provides a ton of shade for our patio.
Well, I would have it pruned either by yourself or someone else. And
okay.
The first thing would be to prune out the dead limbs. And then you might want to look at the structure and see if there are certain branches maybe that should come out. For example, branches that hang too low or branches that are partially broken or something of that nature. So you kind of remove obvious problems or defects.
Okay.
And kind of leave it at that.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Well, thanks for calling, Tim. Good luck. Bye-bye. You're listening to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day, 1-866-780-9100, and we'll go to Janet in Carroll, Iowa. Janet, welcome to the program. What's your question for Richard Geron and Laura Jesse today?
Well, early this spring we noticed the carpenter ants coming back from last year, and they're still here. They come and then they go. What's my best solution? I really don't want to get orchid in here. That's very expensive. Do you have any other ideas?
Yes, certainly carpenter ants are very strong walkers, and they can be coming from even a football field distant and come into the house. They will forage a long way. They actually eat other insects, but they will come into the kitchen. They tend to be attracted more to, you know, meat items and things like that. There's no great way to get rid of carpenter ants in the house, and it doesn't sound like a case where they've, you know, made a colony in rotten wood in the house or anything like that. They're just foraging. The baits don't work well because the baits are baited with sweet things, and so they work well in the sweet ants. I do use them in my house, and it tends to help for a short time period, but it doesn't provide the level of control that we want. So kind of in the summer, it's almost more just, you know, a few ants in the house are nothing to be concerned about. We get more concerned when we see ants in the house in January because that's an indication that the colony might be indoors somewhere.
I see. Okay. So I have been using a spray. And careful when I use it or where, mm-hmm. but that does seem to deter them for a time. And then, you know, it'll be a couple of days we don't see anything, we'll see one or two. So I guess we just have to put up with it, huh?
Yeah, and certainly concentrate around the doors where utility pipes and things come into the house, the areas where they're kind of coming inside. I mean, you can look around the yard if you, you know, I've got a old dead willow stump right next to my house, so I know that's where they're coming from because that's where their colony is. So you can kind of look around the yard for rotting wood and things like that where the colony might be and try to treat them there, but it can be difficult to find where they're coming from.
And that's to spray them there then where you...
Yeah, it's nice if you can find the source and get them there.
Okay.
Thanks,
okay.
Janet.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye now. We'll go next to Larry in Des Moines. Larry, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Yes, good morning. Just a quick question. My wife has a flowering peach tree, weeping flowering peach tree. Whereabouts should she plant it in the garden? She has a flower garden about 50 by 50, sort of in the front area of the house, the driveway. Do I need to protect that from the heavy winter winds?
Well, I would choose a site that has a well-drained soil. That's a must. It needs to be a well-drained soil. And I would try to plant it in a protected location because they're kind of marginally hardy in central Iowa. So if we have a cold or hard winter, it may suffer quite a bit of damage, possibly. So try to find a well-drained soil and kind of a protected site.
That's what I was thinking, too, something behind a hedge or off from the hedge or at the edge of the patio by the sunroom fairly close.
Near a house or maybe protected by maybe some evergreens or something of that nature.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for calling, Larry.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Richard, people are seeing toadstool mushrooms cropping up on the lawns. What's going on there?
Well, it's pretty normal. There are quite a few different species found in Iowa, and the weather has been nice and wet, and so they appreciate that. Mm. Those are basically the fruiting structure of some type of fungus. Mm. Oftentimes, they're coming up from decaying roots in the ground as far as the actual fungus is breaking down that material, and then periodically they send up these fruiting structures. And they're various shapes and size and colors. For the most part, they don't harm anything. They don't hurt the grass or anything of that nature. They can be annoying. As far as edibility, unless you can have those positively identified, the automatic assumption is they're not edible because some are poisonous. And so if you have small children, you may want to pick them up or rake them up and discard them. There is no way, though, to prevent them from coming up. You can't apply something to the ground and stop them. They're going to come up when the environment is basically favorable. So you just deal with them as they come up.
Okay, just wanted to get to that. We'll go to Ray in Des Moines. Ray, we're going to be heading into the break pretty soon. What's your question for Horticulture Day?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. My wife has two basil, sweet basil plants in pots, and they're just riddled with something, and I've sprayed them with an organic rose RX3, and it says for roses and fruits and nuts and everything and vegetables and in and around the home garden, but it hadn't seemed to have done any good. And I was just wondering what we could use to, like 7 or something like that.
I guess the first thing would be to play detective and go out there and see if you can actually find what's actually causing the damage. And I would go out at various times during the day, maybe in the morning around 9 or 10, maybe in the afternoon around 2 or 3, maybe in the evening around 8 or 8:30, because if something actually is eating that foliage or making holes in the foliage, it has to be there at some point during the day. Now, some things do feed at night, so you need to go out in the evening and then see if you can find what's causing it and then go from there.
Yep. And I have to add, I have the same problem with my basil in my pot, and, you know, maybe I'm an entomologist, but, you know, you just can rinse the leaves. There's nothing harmful in it, and especially if you're chopping it up to put on food, it's more of an irritation, but I'm not sure what's eating mine either. I have to move the pot. Earwigs are a possibility of various caterpillars and things, so it can be hard to find, but I would avoid spraying insecticides on it, especially if you're planning to be eating it.
Oh, I see. So we shouldn't use 7.
I would not use 7
on it.
Well,
what if we sprayed something on it? Then what?
If you've already sprayed?
No, I mean if I located something on a plant, then what? What do you do about that?
Well, then once you know what it is, maybe you can check to see if there is a specific insecticide that would work and what the waiting period is for that product on that plant and go from there.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ray. Okay. We appreciate the call. If you have a question for Richard Geron or Laura Jesse today, call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to take a very short break here, but when we return, Richard Geron and Laura Jesse will be here to answer your questions. That's 1-866-780-9100. And this is Iowa Public Radio's Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. Extension horticulturist Richard Geron and extension entomologist Laura Jesse are here to answer your questions. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Diane in Michigan. Michigan, you're calling from the state of Michigan, obviously. Diane, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm really curious about what to do with the mole situation I have at my house. We have a lot of grubs in the yard. Every time I dig up a hole to plant something, I find grubs. And so we put on a product. We applied Grub X, and it seems to work fairly well, but I do still have moles and wonder if there's something better that could be done.
Well, if you apply Grub X, Grub X is a preventative that you apply before they're actually there. Here in Iowa, we typically apply it in late June or July, and if you water it in, then it's present in the soil when the eggs hatch, and they typically hatch sometime around late July, early August, and that would destroy them. It's kind of a preventative type material. But as far as the moles are concerned, they feed on a number of things. They do feed on white grubs, but their main diet is earthworms. So even if you destroy every single grub in the soil, they're still going to have plenty of food. And so you really can't starve them out using that. So that typically doesn't work. It's a very common misconception that you can get rid of moles by getting rid of the actual grubs. So as far as moles are concerned, the best way, not the easiest, but the best way to control them is typically by trapping. You have to be persistent. You have to be patient. They're quite smart. And you simply have to keep on moving that trap around until you actually catch it. The other methods, like the insecticides for grubs or various other things that you might find, like sonic devices and things like that, they just simply don't work. So trapping is the best way. It's just not a very easy way of doing it.
That makes sense, and I appreciate your answer. I'll give that a try.
Well, good. Good luck, Diane. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll go next to Ed in Marengo, Iowa. Ed, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Hi.
Hi.
Last couple of years, we've been having a plague of millipedes. They've been getting down into the basement entry, and they're so numerous, they've been clogging the drain. And I was wondering what can be done to disrupt them or disrupt their life cycle. Without poisoning the yard, that sort of thing.
Well, unfortunately, the problem with millipedes is that they will migrate, and especially in the spring and the fall. And we don't know why they're migrating or where they're going, but people who are kind of in the way of that migration have kind of your experience where they literally will have thousands coming into the house, and it can be, you know, very troublesome. There is no great way beyond using insecticides, and then the insecticides are not even great because millipedes are not insects. Things you can do, rake away any mulch or anything that will provide moisture around the foundation of the house, rake back mulch several feet. We've even found that even to apply insecticide, you've kind of got to go at least 3 feet up the foundation and about 10 feet out into the yard, if not the entire yard, around the whole house. And that usually doesn't eliminate the problem, but it will reduce kind of the roar of millipedes down to a trickle. So it's definitely a serious problem, and usually it's a problem for a few years and then not as much, but the millipedes can build up big populations, but they might not even be, you know, in your yard. They might be, you know, nearby in a, you know, unused lot or something like that, and then migrating through.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I was afraid of that. Well, thanks for the information.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Ed. Bye-bye now. We'll go next to John in Cedar Falls. John, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just like your last caller, I kind of have an insect problem, but it's earwigs. They kind of come through my basement mostly, but they're starting to kind of come into my bedroom upstairs. But usually they like to stay in my basement where it's kind of cool and dark most of the time. I've tried Ortho Home Defense spraying that inside and outside my house, but they still make their way into my house. Is there anything else that I could do to kind of keep them out of my house?
Yeah, the earwigs, there's no great, you know, secret product or anything like that. Most of the, you know, garden insecticides you can use outside. The key is to kind of focus around the windows, around the foundation, but you can't, you know, you kind of got, like with the millipede, you've got to go several feet up the side of the house and then several feet out into the lawn. You can't, you know, a little dribble, and be sure to rake back mulch and things like that, because if you put down an insecticide, the mulch will just basically absorb it and it won't get to where the earwigs are at all. But most of us are having, I think I had about 40 of them in my basement the other day. So there's definitely a lot of them out there, a lot of them getting indoors. They don't survive indoors or reproduce well indoors. You know, they don't get in the kitchen. They're not really a pest. They're more of an accidental invader, but certainly a big problem. But yeah, I would, you know, insecticides outdoors, I like to keep, you know, the chemicals outdoors when we can, but it might be just focusing around those areas where they're getting in.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, John. Good luck. But they're such sweet little creatures, Laura. I mean,
I know.
Aw. We'll go to Alon in Cedar Rapids now. Alon, welcome to Horticulture Day.
Well, thank you. The concern I have a blue spruce in my front yard, and I think it's about 35 years old, and I'm sure it's over 50 feet tall. But my concern is at the bottom of the branches, it's green and nice looking, but in the middle of the branches, it's kind of a light brown and not healthy looking.
Okay.
I just wonder what that might be.
So the end of the branch is okay.
Right.
But the middle part of the branch is brown.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, I would begin by saying that the needles on an evergreen are not permanent. Each spring, they put on a flush of growth.
Uh-huh.
And in the fall of the year, they will lose a flush of growth. So when you look at a branch, at the very end, you're going to find this year's growth, below that last year's growth, below that the previous year's growth, and below that basically a bare branch, because they eventually do fall off. Now, we can get a disease called rhizosphere needle cast, which is fairly common on these spruce trees. And what that does, it will cause the needles to fall off sooner than they should. They fall off prematurely. And therefore, when that happens, they don't look as full. You can actually see inside. You can kind of see some of the brown because they're not as full as they should be because they have that disease.
I see.
So that may be what's going on here. It might be rhizosphere needle cast.
The other thing, my concern, I'm wondering if the tree would be in kind of a danger because of this situation, or do you think it might eventually clear up or just stay the same without any problem, I guess is what I was wondering.
Well, if it's rhizosphere or needle cast, I would guess that it would slowly decline, where it would decline in vigor, in health, and might eventually die. Because if a tree has fewer needles than normal, it's not able to produce as much food. It's going to decline in health. It gets more rhizosphere or needle cast, loses more needles, and it's kind of a downward trend where eventually you have a lot more brown than green, and at some point it becomes no longer a asset. It becomes a problem. And
I wonder if maybe at this point if I should have someone look at that and just to tell me what I probably should do, huh?
Well, what you could do on that is go out and maybe take off two or three small branches, that are exhibiting symptoms. Maybe they have some brown or purple needles on the branches. Put those in a plastic bag and then bring them down to your county extension office and have them send it to the plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State. And the staff can look at that and determine if that's rhizosphere needle cast.
Well, I'll do that, and thank you very much. That really helps a lot.
Well, thank you. We hope it works out for you, Lon.
You bet.
Bye-bye now. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We're going to be heading into a break right now. If you have questions for Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron or Extension Entomologist Laura Jesse is joining us today to answer your questions about the plants and insects in your life, you can call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in about 5 minutes, or exactly 5 minutes, actually, and take more of your calls and emails. We're going to take this break, and then we'll be back at 10:36. So stay with us. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. This is Iowa Public Radio's Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Extension Entomologist Laura Jesse are taking your questions about the plants and insects in your life. If you have questions for them, call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or you can email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Mildred in Ames. Mildred, thanks for waiting. What's your question? Mildred, are you there? Or Martha, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Martha, okay.
Martha, there's a Mildred, too. We're going to get to Mildred in a minute. Mildred, hang on, I'm sorry. Martha, go ahead. I apologize.
Well, sure, no problem. I've got quaking aspens in my backyard that we planted about 7 years ago, and they came as 2 or 3 year old small trees. We planted four of them, and within about a year, one of them died, just stopped producing leaves, mm-hmm. turned kind of blackish. And so now I've got three remaining, and they've been very healthy, particularly the two on the outside. But the one on the interior now for a couple of years has started to look a little peaked, and its lower branches are no longer producing leaves, and the lower branches look sort of black.
Okay.
Like they've got cankers on them.
They could have. The aspen is related to the cottonwood and the poplar,
mm-hmm.
and that group of plants has problems with cankers on occasion.
Okay.
And a canker is a fungus that attacks the actual branch. And if it completely girdles that branch, then that branch dies.
Okay.
And there's really no way to prevent that, as far as there's no spray or fungicide that would prevent that. So mm-hmm. you don't really have that option.
Okay.
Basically what you do is you prune off that dead branch and get rid of it.
Okay.
And you try to give the tree the best care possible, keep it as healthy as possible, because a healthy tree can sometimes fight it off.
Right.
While a tree that's not doing well in poor health is much more susceptible to it. So that's
sure,
the main thing.
Sense.
You really don't have anything that you can do immediately. Mm-hmm. Just prune out the dead branch and hope for the best, kind of.
Okay. And does that have something to do with the circulation of air around it? Because it's hemmed in by the two aspens on either side.
It may have, but I'm thinking it might be more to do with the growing conditions at the site as far as soil conditions, moisture
okay.
conditions, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those tend to be much more important.
Okay.
And that can affect their growth and kind of weaken them and make them more vulnerable.
Okay. Well, that's good advice. We'll cut out the damaged branches.
Thanks, Martha. Good luck.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll go now to Mildred in Wesley. Thanks for waiting, Mildred. Welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
I have something called alpine currant, and it's about 6 feet tall, but there's a lot of dead stuff in it. And I was wondering when I could cut that back and cut the dead stuff out, and how far back, how far to the ground can I cut it?
Alpine currant is kind of a small shrub. We kind of use it as a small hedge. The dead wood you can prune out right now. That's no problem. You can do that
okay.
now. So when you have dead wood in a shrub or a tree, whenever that dead wood or branch shows up, you can prune it out at that time. It doesn't make any difference as far as timing. As far as pruning back the shrub overall, like pruning mm-hmm. back some of the live growth, I would wait and do that in March.
Oh.
During the late dormant period, when it's basically without foliage, when
okay.
it's bare. And with that, you could cut it back some. I guess I would cut it back by maybe as much as maybe a quarter of the plant.
Oh.
So I wouldn't cut it back to the ground, but you can cut it back overall maybe like a quarter of the plant.
Okay. Well, there's some coming up from the ground
mm-hmm.
that's about, oh, maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet high. And then there's this bare spots, and then the other branches have, you know, they're taller, and they have leaves on again and mm-hmm. berries.
Okay. Well, I would try to prune out the dead wood this year
mm-hmm.
and maybe do some pruning in March, kind of shape it up, and I think over time it should kind of grow back and look nice again.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mildred. Good luck with that. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We'll go next to Nancy in Altoona. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I inherited some landscaping that someone else did, and I've got a number of plants that are really crowded. So I want to, and I've started moving some around since last year, so I guess I have kind of a two-part question. One, am I going to run into a problem moving some of these perennial plants before fall? And then two, it appears that some of the layers of mulch may have brought, maybe from the bag, seem to have some fungus. I'm getting little, they're little tiny fungus that I started to notice even last year. So I don't think it's just the wet season. And I'm wondering, would the best thing be to just try and scrape all the mulch off and get rid of it and then move the plants, or am I going to have the fungus regardless?
Well, as far as moving the plants around, many perennials you can move or transplant. There are some that have a tap root that are very difficult to transplant, but most you can transplant. And the best times typically for most are in the spring, as they're just coming up in the spring, or possibly in late summer. As far as the fungus, that's a fungus that's just found on the mulch itself. It's not a plant disease per se, so it's not really hurting the plants. And I guess the way that I would probably deal with that, if that is annoying me, I might just cover it with a fresh layer of material just a little bit, or maybe go out with a rake and kind of loosen it, and so the mulch kind of dries out more quickly, and that should encourage the fungus to kind of fade away to some extent. So you could do those two things. But it's going to be around because it's basically growing on the mulch. Not hurting the plants, but it's growing on the mulch.
Sure. Okay.
Does that sound like a plan, Nancy?
It does. Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling. Nancy called in at 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jeff in Carbon Cliff writes, in our yard, we've got tremendous amounts of creeping Charlie and dandelions popping up around in places. My dad told me I could use ortho spray that could connect to the garden hose to rid the yard of the weeds. My wife doesn't want me to spray anything in the yard because she has a garden, doesn't want chemicals in the ground. Is that something we would have to worry about? I was thinking about waiting till after harvest to spray, but what do you think?
Well, you may have to make some compromises there, but as far as doing it, actually fall is the best time. And so going out possibly in mid to late September, and coming back a month later and doing it a second time. In the case of the creeping Charlie or the ground ivy, it does typically take two applications. One application typically is not sufficient. And so you do it twice, about 30 days apart. And in the fall of the year, most things are getting ready for winter. Trees are dropping their leaves. Most of the garden produce is done. So there's not as much danger as far as applying at that point. As far as applying it, I would prefer to apply that with a small garden sprayer rather than a hose-end sprayer. The hose-end sprayer tends to put out a lot more material, and when you apply a broadleaf herbicide, you would like to apply it on a nice calm day, get the nozzle down to the ground, and apply it to the point where the foliage is wet. So you're not putting on a large amount. You're not soaking the ground. You're not doing any type of that thing. And when you have like a hose-end sprayer, that does put out a lot of material, way more than you really need. So I'd be more inclined to use a small garden sprayer. And in the case of the ground ivy or creeping Charlie, products that contain either 2,4-D or triclopyr are the most effective. Triclopyr is T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R. And those two materials are found in quite a few different products. Ortho has a product that is strictly triclopyr. That's Ortho Weed Be Gone, Chickweed, Clover, and Oxalis Killer. So use something that contains either 2,4-D or triclopyr, and that should control the ground ivy or creeping Charlie.
Okay, sounds good. We'll go now to Patty in Des Moines. Patty, welcome to the program. What's your question on Horticulture Day?
I had my basement wall replaced, and the mound of clay that we removed, it was skid loader. Now the ground has to be leveled, and there's quite a bit of clay. So when that's leveled, how much topsoil do I have to put on top of that? So grass is growing now, sort of, on that clay, but how much topsoil do I have to put on top of that clay to make sure the grass stays hold?
Most of your plants need about at least a foot of good soil to really grow well, and that would be true for grass. Even trees, most of their roots are in the top 2 feet of soil. So if you have a good foot of soil, 12 inches of good soil, that should be sufficient for turf grasses and most other herbaceous plants.
There's grass growing now, so there must be some kind of, it's not all clay, it's not the solid clay. There was grass there before, you know, in my lawn. There was just some clay that came out. It must be mixed in with some grass somehow, because there's grass growing now. It's not solid clay.
Now, when you do amend a soil, let's say you have a clay-type soil and you'd like to amend it to improve it, let's say you bring in some good, well-drained soil or maybe some organic matter like compost. When you do that, you need to work it into the existing soil, not just leave it on top where you have distinct layers, but actually work it into the existing soil. So what you might want to do first is to simply go out there with a spade or a tiller, spade it up, then bring in your material, maybe a couple inches, and work that into the existing soil. Then maybe bring in more material, work that in, and finally end up with your 12 inches of good soil.
Does that make sense, Patty?
How do I explain the grass growing now? Is that
well, grass is a pretty tough plant. It may grow, it may be there, but it may not really grow very well. So if you really want it to grow well, to fill in nicely, you may have to amend the soil.
With a foot of soil. With a foot of topsoil.
You want to have, when you're done, you want to have 1 foot of good soil. What you have there is a beginning, and maybe bringing in several inches of either soil or compost, working that into the existing soil. When you're done, you probably should have about a foot of good soil.
My yard's going to be taller than it was.
Well, you may have to remove some material, too, in that case, before
okay.
you start.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Patty. We appreciate the call. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We have an email from Laura in Des Moines. She says, you previously answered my question about my Concord grapes not producing because I planted them in a large planter. Your recommendation was to move them to the ground. My question now is, should I do that this summer or wait until next year to transplant?
I guess I'd probably do it now. If it's growing in a pot or container, when you take it out of the pot, you're really not going to disturb that root system that much. And so you could do that right now. And that's true for anything in a container, whether it's a perennial, a tree, or a shrub. You can basically plant those almost any time during the growing season.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll go to Janet in Shannon City. Janet, welcome to the program. Janet, are you with us? Hello? Well, I'm not sure if Janet is still with us or not. So we'll go next to Tom in Carlisle, Iowa. Tom, welcome to the
program. Okay.
Hi. Hello? Tom, you may have some feedback coming in from your radio there. I don't know. Tom, are you there from Carlisle?
Don, I'm sorry.
Don, you're Don? Okay,
yeah.
I got a Tom here, but Don. Okay, Don yep. from Carlisle. We were both confused, but anyway, sorry about that. We'll
That's
just
right.
move on. What's your question for Horticulture Day?
I've had the last 2 years in a row, I've had these little grubs show up in my house, typically on the floor, curled up, dead or dying. I guess the weird part of that is they're either in the upstairs bathroom, the main level bathroom, or on the basement floor. They're never on carpet. They're always on hard surfaces. Even a throw rug in the basement, they'll not be any on that, but they'll be on the concrete dead.
Not sure exactly. Are they white or kind of hairy?
No, they're just kind of a brown neutral color. Scaled, probably, you know, some of the bigger ones are maybe, 5/8 of an inch long and 1/8 inch in diameter, down to little bitty ones.
Well, I'm probably, if I wanted to do a good identification, it would be great to have a picture or the insect, you know, to take to your local extension office. I'm going to kind of take a stab in the dark because one of the really common kind of grub-like insects that we've had this spring have been larder beetle larvae. And larder beetle larvae actually feed on dead insects and things often in the walls of the house. They can be feeding on, you know, dried milks, dried meats, woolen, you know, anything of kind of animal origin. But what we're really finding is that all the lady beetles and all the box elder bugs that come in the fall and die in the walls have provided a really good food source for these beetles. And then the larvae kind of crawl out and people find them in their house. But you know, this is a bit of a stab in the dark because I'm not sure from your description what it is. But that's the one thing that I can think of that's been very common this spring.
Okay, I'll try to look that up. Give me the name of that again, please.
Larder beetle.
Larder, okay.
Yep.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Well,
thank
I appreciate
you.
The call, Don. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We'll go next to Andrew in Johnston. Andrew, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question for Richard Geron and Laura Jesse?
Yes, how do you do?
Hi.
For you to take my call. I have leaves on roses with full of holes, and they're not producing much. The leaves seem to be just dropping off. And the other rose bush that we planted last year in the meantime has died, and this appears to be happening to the other rose bushes. We have a lot of rose bushes planted.
Okay. The damage to the foliage, are there holes, complete holes through the foliage?
Yes.
Okay. I was thinking initially a rose slug. A rose slug is a small green slug-like caterpillar or larva, and it feeds on the foliage, and it eats most of the green tissue, but it leaves behind kind of like the skin or a thin layer of tissue, and that turns kind of a light brown, so you have kind of a window pane appearance when they do that, but there's usually not the hole that goes right through it. That insect has basically, for the most part, come and gone. And so that would have been on the oldest leaves. The new leaves would not be affected. Any other thoughts, Laura?
Yeah, there's a few, like you said, the rose slug and some rose sawflies that can cause pretty serious defoliation. I don't think they would cause the bushes to die. I'm concerned that there might be something going on here that we're missing because you're having the bushes actually die. Have you seen any new damage to them?
Well, beginning in the early spring, the rose bushes did well, other than the one that actually died, which died sometime last year and has never recovered since. The other ones are showing these holes in the leaves. But when you mentioned about the new sprouts that are coming out, there are some new sprouts that are still not affected, but they're usually on the very lower part of the rose bush, while the upper parts and the healthier looking that were in the spring have basically full of holes.
Okay. Well, that could be a rose slug because that would be on the bottom foliage. Now, there is a leaf cutter bee that we do see on occasion, and that would make these very precise little holes, round holes, in the actual foliage. We see that on occasion. We don't worry about those. They don't really cause that much damage. So I guess what I'd probably do is go out and, again, play detective and see if you can find something on the plant. And if you can, then go from there. But it may have been the rose slug. It may have caused damage. It may have left already, in which case you don't really have to do anything.
So spraying at this point in time would be of any consequence or not?
Not unless you can find what's on the actual plant. I mean, if you went out there and you found something on the plant and it was eating the foliage, then I would say, yes, you can definitely treat. But if you go out there and you can't find anything, that would suggest it's no longer present and there's typically no need to treat.
I see. Second question, I have an area in the yard with standing water when it rains a lot, and what I'd like to know, is there any kind of trees that can be planted that are specifically good for standing water? Eventually it disappears after a day or two following a heavy rain, but that area tends to be more on the wet side, that part of the yard. Are there any plants or trees that would work well for that area?
There are definitely perennials and trees and shrubs that do well in wet soils. A really neat tree that does well in wet soils is the bald cypress. It's actually
bald cypress.
It's actually a conifer, but it's a deciduous conifer. It drops its leaves in the fall. And it likes wet, swampy sites. As far as a shrub, maybe a red osier dogwood would be a possibility. They kind of like wet sites too.
Dogwood?
The red the red osier dogwood. Yes.
Red osier. Okay.
Red osier dogwood. There's also a button bush, which likes wet soil. So there are a number of things that you can plant that would do well in wet soils.
Thanks, Andrew. We're going to move on here, but
okay,
we wish
you
luck. Bye-bye now. We're going to move on to Rachel in Iowa City for our remaining moments on Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. Rachel, quick question.
Sure. I'm a vermicomposter, and I've never had problems with fruit flies in my worm bins. But for some reason this summer, I've had this tremendous bloom of fruit flies in the worm bins. And I'm just wondering if you have any remedies for fruit flies that are organic and natural.
Well, goodness. I've actually never had this question before and never really thought about it. You know, this might be really difficult to do because to find something that will get rid of the fruit flies and not hurt the worms, I have no great. I think I'm going to have you email me or give me a call in the Plant Insect Diagnostic Clinic, and I will go ahead and spend some time looking this up. And would you like that phone number?
Well, we don't really have time, but if we go to the website, Iowa State University Extension, you can find it there. A Horticulture Day, Day's End, we'll be back next week. Thank you so much, Richard Geron and Laura Jesse. We had technical assistance from Lindsay Move today. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks for joining us.
Friday, June 25th on the Java House stage is part of Iowa Public Radio's Java Blend series, Quad Cities artist Danica Holmes.
She's like an unlit match, just waiting to burn, just waiting to burn.
Danica Holmes in concert. It's open just to the public. No tickets are needed. At Iowa City's downtown Java House, Friday, June 25th at 2 p.m.
Just waiting to burn.
You're listening to Iowa Public Radio, WSUI, Iowa City, Cedar Rapids. Support comes from the Kirkwood Room at Governor's Ridge, Iowa City's newest spot for any luncheon, business meeting, reception, or family gathering. Information at kirkwoodroom.com. And support comes from international programs at the University of Iowa, your global intersection, connecting the world with Iowa and Iowa with the world. Information about IP's people, programs, and events at accents.international.uiowa.edu. Mostly sunny across